Train Talk Radio, episode number 4.
Live from the La Mesa Model Railroad Club, it's Train Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jared Black. Join me and my co-host, Austin McAdams, as we discuss in-depth topics related to HO-scale trains and the prototypes.
Hello, everyone, and we are back here at the La Mesa Model Railroad Club, and guess what? It's December nights, and once again, we have Austin McAdams back from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yes.
Which he was not present last week, and we had Travis Clark, who is running around, and I don't know what he's doing right now.
I have to say, though, he did a great job, I have to admit.
Phenomenal job. Phenomenal job by him. So, we have a few topics we want to cover, and it is December nights, so that means the museum is open until what?
9 o'clock tonight.
9 o'clock tonight, and it's free.
Oh. And it's super packed.
It's not like any of you are going to hear this before then, but we already plugged it on the last week's show. So, oh gosh, what's coming? We got
Santa Flush.
Santa Flush. Yeah, Santa Fe, for those of you who don't know the slang term. What, 4 units here. GE.
You know, back to the
2 MDs.
The first episode about GEVOs. Think about it. I mean, you know, nowadays you see GEVOs. Back in the 80s, you'd see that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's... I mean, look at the design of the engines.
It reminds me back then, GEs were thought of as not as reliable as AMD.
No. Santa Fe and SP were definitely AMD.
Yeah, they're the workhorses of the industry now.
Yeah.
So, like I was going to say, we need to get back into our topics, and I just want to hear about your trip to Scottsdale, Arizona.
Well, you know, it was really nice. We go to visit our friends, my dad's best friend from work. He used to work with him a long time ago. And it's a 6-hour trip, but the beauty of it, be going Highway 8, which those who don't know is the Sunset Route.
The Sunset Route is the transcontinental line that runs on the southern part of our great nation.
Yeah,
correct.
It goes from LA all the way to Orlando, Florida.
Mm-hmm. But from what I heard, because that's the route that the Sunset Limited takes.
Yes.
And it would go all the way to Florida, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But now it's not.
Yeah, I think it stops. I believe it's still Florida, but not all the way. They have a connecting train.
Because I heard it was like New Orleans. That's as far as it goes.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Because is the line open or is it just?
I think it just took too long, and I think the majority of people weren't going to Orlando, Florida. You know, but it's a great line. It's really just flat. It's a little bit of a grade going west. I figured out by watching the trains. You know.
Yeah.
And one thing that it's kind of frustrating is you see all this foreign power on this line.
Right.
I saw an all NS consist, but you come to Tehachapi, you almost never do.
So tell us about some of the unique things you saw on your trip. Railroad wise, of course.
Well, I saw on NS units, of course. I actually saw an engine that my Travis has.
Yeah,
which
is
5252.
5252.
Right.
It's interesting how they that's actually kind of ironic, in a way.
Yeah.
You know, the 5252, how you have the two.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's strange, like, because you have, what?
5432.
5432. Yeah. I mean, do you have a fascination with number patterns and stuff?
Actually, I didn't realize it was synchronized until after I bought it, because a fellow club member, I bought the same series as he did, and 5432 is actually the only unit still in stock.
Right.
And he also had the other two units. So I just bought it, and afterwards I figured, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just more for random numbers.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I've seen several times, you know, actually in real life where there'll be, you know, numbers that are fairly close to each other actually in, like, the same, like, just one after another
in a
consist. But it's rare. It's rare.
I've even seen a brand new GATX tank cars that were like 20 of them in series, the exact same number after each other because they came from the shop.
Right.
But it's something that was kind of cool to see. But
so how many trains did you actually see? Scottsdale, is there a double track through there?
No.
Or is it just
a
single
track? Gila Bend, for those of you who don't know, you know, is where we have to turn north to go to Scottsdale.
Right.
The route keeps going right around the border in Texas. So I probably saw maybe about 3 hours of mainline, I want to say. You know, we kind of catch it.
But it's single track, right?
Yes, with packing settings, yeah. It's actually, if you compare it to Tehachapi, it's a lot more single track.
Right.
there's certain
areas. But it's still really busy, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's
all these stack trains coming from, you know, the east or the west. You know, domestics, you have internationals.
Yeah.
You know, trailers, everything else. A couple Autorack trains. Actually, one of the Autorack trains comes from Nogales, Arizona.
Yeah.
And goes to Milipus, which is actually over to Hatchby.
Wow. So you saw a train. Did you see that exact train? You knew, because you're the kind of person who knows the symbols and you've done your homework on that. Did you know what trains you were seeing as you saw them?
You know, I'm not too familiar with the Sunset Route because I don't really rail fan it too often. I knew a couple symbols, but I'm not too confident in them.
So are you, the train that you saw, the one that goes over to Hatchby, did you see that or not?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
So you know the symbol of that one, and that is the...
The actual symbol?
Yeah.
It's the A-NGMI.
Okay. So A stands for...
Autorack.
Autorack.
And for and those you not to confuse, for BNSF, it's V.
V, right. And how many units do you usually have on that?
It just depends. You know, going west, they're loaded, which, you know, is towards L.A. They usually have about a 3x1.
3x1. Three, for the people who don't know that, that's three locomotives on the front. One DPU.
But I've seen it as a 1x1. You know, it depends on the cars and the weight.
So what's the advantage to having a 1x1 than just a 2 in the front?
Well, I think it's really for the length and the weight of the train. You know, you never want to tilt a car or whatever, you know. So I think if you know, in model, we can't really unload a car per se.
Right.
You know, in real life, they run a 100-car train with, like, four in the front if it's empty.
Yeah. So is it when, especially, like, I've heard the practice is usually the DPU will throttle up before the lead units to push on the train to get it started.
Yeah.
And then it helps with the dynamic braking down the hill, stretches the train, and helps on the uphill climbs and such.
Yeah.
Just to keep the train moving.
Yeah. Well, and then I forgot, I actually saw a 2x2. The two were in the middle.
Really?
Yes.
Swing. So are those still technically swing helpers?
No. Swing helpers are on the rear.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
And I thought swing...
The whole swing helper idea is really kind of gone because the idea of a swing helper was it wasn't always in full. If the front's in notch 4, the swing helper is probably in notch 3.
Oh, okay. So they're not... They're given some power, but not...
Everything's not just a DPU now, as you know.
Right.
But on that train, the 2x2, it actually had the rescue unit at the point.
Really?
Which is UP 7400. Fortunately, I couldn't get a good picture of it.
Oh, that's too bad. Did you take any video?
Yes, but with my awesome videoing skills, I shot right into the sun.
Oh.
So it was ruined.
You need a lens hood on that camera.
Yeah. But I saw a brand new painted Dash 9.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
9633.
And that is what?
It might have been an XSP in that. Too familiar with numbers.
What road was it painted for? UP?
Yeah, UP.
Was it what they painted with the yellow seal and the...
Yeah, armor yellow and yellow seal, everything, you know.
Are they doing the flag anymore?
No.
No?
Those are only the 9800 series Dash 9s, the head those.
So they're just putting a general UP?
Yeah, just the UP on the shield on the front and on the side of the red lettering.
Oh, so that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Are they basically repainting their... most of their Dash 9 fleet or not?
You know, I think it just kind of depends on how it looks. You know, I mean, some of these Dash 9s are the older GE, and they just get filthy from, you know, engine cut on fire, rusting, whatever, you know, cheap paint.
Yeah.
So it just kind of depends.
So the paint kind of protects it whenever, you know, the barrier's broken, they feel they have to paint a locomotive.
Mm-hmm.
So since we have no heritage update this episode...
No.
I don't know if we will... on the next episode.
I mean, technically, Heritage, I saw the breast cancer unit. I mean, that's a special unit, you know.
Yeah, how is UP's Heritage endeavors? They've done the roads that they've taken up on the units. And what other locomotives have they done? I know they did an ACE in the George Bush paint scheme a few years back.
4141.
And they've done a breast cancer unit, which is a
ES-44 AC,
And they painted it pink, right?
Yes. Well, it's not pink. It's, instead of a flag, it's a yellow ribbon.
Really?
I'm sorry. Pink ribbon.
Pink ribbon.
Yes.
Yeah, for breast cancer.
And there's also, the Olympic torch units.
Yeah.
For the 2002 games in Salt Lake City. And there's also the Boy Scout unit, which is 2010. Yeah. And that's kind of a special unit. You know, it's the 100th year anniversary or something. So.
So that's pretty interesting. So you say your trip was, it was well worth the trip?
Well, I mean, you know, we don't go for the trains. You know? But it's definitely a cool thing for me to see.
You went to visit family?
Right.
And so. You stopped at a railroad place, like with the club?
There's a place called Dateland, which is, you know, the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And, well, it has dates there, of course, and, you know, like a 7-Eleven. And it's just kind of a cool spot to get in a stop out, you know, stretch your legs, get something to drink, and watch trains.
That's pretty interesting.
So.
And it included a small railroad on the property there?
No, it's just the train tracks.
Oh,
the
okay.
The real ones, yeah.
And then you saw a layout, right?
Well, that's in Scottsdale.
That's in Scottsdale. That's I know what the one you're talking about.
It's called McCormick Park.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a 15-inch gauge railroad.
Yes, and they also have, you know, HL. But the cool thing is some of the members at that club are actually come here for our sessions, mm-hmm. you know, for our 50
sessions. So that goes to show you how, well, widespread the club is, how the people that know the club are actually extend all across the country. I was back in Pennsylvania a few years back, and I rode the New Hope in Ivyland, which is a tourist railroad out of New Hope, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And the conductor on that, oh, I have to tell you this. First off, they were running trains every hour on the hour.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was a two coaches in GP30. And me and my dad got on the train, and we found out probably about halfway through the ride, we're the only people on the train.
Oh, really?
Except for the conductor. So the conductor ends up talking to us the rest of the trip, you know, because we're sitting in the first class car, and we talked to him, and he knew immediately what the La Mesa Model Railroad Club was, what we do, what we model.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably about as far as you can get from San Diego
in
the United States. So that goes to show you this is a world-renowned club.
Well, and the reason why is because of our sessions.
Right.
You know, you step foot in here on a session, and you're literally 60 years ago in 1952.
They run everything like it was on that particular day.
Yeah.
And you can forget whatever worries you have in reality on that day.
It's amazing, you know, how accurate
it's a time
they
machine.
Are. Yeah. You know, and for, you know, for us youth, it's inspiring mm-hmm. because obviously we weren't around in that time.
Yeah.
You know, we grew up seeing GEs and modern BNSF and UP.
Well, I mean, even though you can probably talk to some of the other members who missed the steam era, but they do participate heavily in the 50s op sessions.
Right.
But it's kind of, they buy into it because it's a time machine. They can actually live in that time period through the layout.
Right.
And they understand how things worked.
Well, it's a lot different.
Yeah.
Like, you know, talking about earlier about the sunset route, all those stack trains.
Right.
They didn't have those, you know, and over time, I mean, you look at all the box cars and flat cars, and they had a lot more box cars back then.
Yeah.
And a lot of that freight has been, you know, put into the intermodal. Like I was telling you earlier, you can fit a whole house in a container.
Right. I mean, for those of you know, I'm pretty big into modern stuff.
Right. As well as am I.
I started pretty much modeling the 70s and 80s. That's kind of what I started in, and then I found, I mean, I like that era, but I'd say what I like modern, then I like 50s, then I like 70s and mm-hmm. 80s in the middle period.
Right.
And it's just because I like modern because that's the stuff I'm exposed to
right.
on a daily basis. Well, not on a daily basis, but, you know,
which
in my life.
What you grew up seeing.
Yeah, and those are the sights and sounds and smells that, you know, I connect to with a train in my brain,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably what appeals to me. If I had been born in the 50s, I'd probably model the 50s more than I model modern. But still, 50s appeals to me because through this layout, I can kind of get that sense of what it was like.
Yeah.
That I don't know. It's kind of like a taste you kind of get in the mind
right,
of.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you look at the equipment, you kind of you look at pictures and stuff, you know, that's kind of what it looked like, and this is what you see as a 3D model, and you basically are transported, and you kind of feel what it's like. And the one thing I don't like about modern is the how many intermodal trains are. They're all the same.
Yeah.
Whereas in 50s, you'd immediately know what that train was carrying based on the car type.
Yeah, well, that's why I mean, I like intermodal, but I feel like it's more fun to model a manifest because
right.
you can have lumber loads, pipe loads, you know, concrete tie loads, right, whatever really gets your imagination going.
Like if you see a reefer car, like in the 50s, like we see here in the Bakersfield yard, you know, immediately they're carrying produce or they're empty, you know.
Yeah.
Here they'd be carrying potatoes for the potato rush out of the from Arvin. Oh, I'm sorry about that. If you heard that in the background, there's some people talking very loudly, but that's actually surprising because the museum isn't even open yet. But yeah, you know what they're carrying. Like, there's a variety of cars.
Well, look right here. We have these gondolas with beats in them.
Right. You know that there was a lot of open loads. They don't do that much anymore. There's some, you know, maybe like a open hopper might carry some ballast or something.
Yeah, which that still happens.
Yeah, but nowadays, like, everything pretty much is carried in a intermodal container or in a special covered car.
Yeah.
That does not expose it to the outside.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one cool thing that a club member actually told me is, you look at a grain train. You know, you can cut a hopper, can carry anything. But in the 50s, they'd actually take boxcars and take wood.
Yeah, I've seen that.
They'd fill it with grain.
They bolt up the, They did this on the Southern Pacific Narrow Gauge, which ran between Keeler and Laws, California, which is up on the eastern side of the Sierra Nevada Mountains. But they did that, you know, all of the Southern Pacific Company, what they do is they'd make a makeshift cupboard hopper by, they'd batten the door down, bolt it shut so you can't open it and let all the cement out or whatever. And they'd have doors on the top. They'd have more doors than, you know, a reefer car would have. And they'd just fill the cement into the box car.
Well, this time I'm talking about, actually, they had doors open. And they have plywood in the doorway that's about maybe 2/3 of the way up. And they'd load it in that way, and they'd have to unload it, you know, another way.
Yeah.
But it was a makeshift way back then. You know, I mean, in back then there wasn't as much grain being transported by train.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nowadays they have unit trains of, you know, 100 cars full of them.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you had a lot more mixed trains back then.
Mm-hmm.
You had a lot more unit trains, too, wouldn't you?
Technically.
I mean, here in Tehachapi, or the Tehachapi area out in the west, we don't have as many unit trains as you'd see, you know, back where they're doing coal drags and stuff.
Well, yeah, there actually is two coal trains over Tehachapi.
Mm-hmm.
One comes off the BNSF Transcon, goes up through Barstow,
yeah,
and then the Mojave, but doesn't go over the pass.
Right.
The other one is maybe like a 3 times weekly train, but you know, you don't see coal like you do out of the Powder River Basin, where it's every day.
Yeah.
You know, the Midwest, because a lot of out here is electricity; it's not coal powered plants.
Right, and so you'd see a lot more, you know, activity in that regard, as to there'd be a lot more manned helpers. Well, now there's no manned helpers on the pass, but back in the 50s, you'd see, you know, a lot of alternate crews.
Well, even up to 2000 when it kind of stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they were doing it up into the late 90s.
Yeah.
But then this technology, I think I read back a while back about the first DPU experiments on the pass,
mm-hmm,
and it was I forget, there was a problem or something, you know.
Well, the radio waves, they couldn't efficiently go between tunnels.
Yeah.
The SP tried it on Tehachapi, and they weren't satisfied with it, you know.
Yeah, but now the technology is foolproof almost.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting how little preparation has to go into, you know, a train that has to go over the pass nowadays, whereas back then, you know, they'd have to have the locomotive serviced here at the Bakersfield Roundhouse. They'd have to be set out on the ready track. They'd move them up to Mount Vernon Avenue up there.
Yeah. And there's less engines, you know. They put the helpers on there, and they'd cut them out at Summit. Nowadays, they just keep going up the train, even if they're not even moving. They can, from the front, they can put them in idle or a lower or higher notch.
Do they use... I'm not too familiar with it, but do they use the computer to assist them in any of that?
Yeah.
Like determining how much tractive effort they actually need in a particular instance.
Well, I mean, in the old days, you know, you had to know what you're doing for tonnage.
Yeah.
It's on the computer now.
Right.
So it's a lot easier.
So is a DPU manually controlled from the lead unit, or is the computer doing most of the work on regulating?
It's both. They can set it up where it's just notch for front, notch for back, you know, automatic, or they can do it manually.
So it's kind of like here where it's matched to whatever
the
lead unit
is. Or you can also
doing.
Do it separately, mm-hmm, depending on the grade, if you need it or whatever, you know. And it's just, there's a lot, you know, less effort goes into it. I mean, a lot less, you know, crews.
Like, you'd see a regular train coming through Bakersfield nowadays, and it probably just goes right through, right?
Oh, yeah.
If the signals are clear. Back then, they probably have to stop and...
Well, a lot more trains were sent out of Bakersfield, too.
Right.
You know, Bakersfield has really declined over the years, where there's two trains for Bakersfield, one going north, one going south, and one for, and then, you know, for UP, and there's one for BNSF.
Yeah. Well, speaking on the modern versus the old, I thought we'd talk about maybe like the usage of concrete ties in today's main lines, especially on Tatchpe. I mean, you see concrete ties. Do you see them as kind of any line that's degrading, that is a main line, when they have to go to replace it, do they immediately go to concrete ties, or would they bring in...
Well, they did concrete ties in 83 when they kind of redid the pass because of the flood.
So even that long ago, I had not realized that they...
Yeah. Well, concrete ties, they last longer.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it was a real step up. I mean, there are the coastline is not concrete tied all the way.
Right.
Only in certain parts, because there's only three turns a day. But Tehachapi is such a big point for Tehachapi, you know, for UP and BNSF, that it's a necessity.
I wonder how often they have to change out the rail on some of these curves, because I was up at Tehachapi a few years ago, and for those of you who are familiar with Caliente, there's a horseshoe there.
Right.
And I walked out along the track, and the outside rail was almost gnawed 25% into the head of the rail.
Yeah, well, it's a 15-mile-an-hour zone for a reason. Yeah.
And then the next year I came back and they had replaced the rail and it looked, you know, new and the form was correct. So how often do you think they'd have to replace the rail on Tehachapi these days?
I don't think there's really a maximum or minimum.
But like
time.
On these curves, like say Caliente Horseshoe.
Well, you know, the Caliente, why it's so important is, but you're coming off that 2.3% grade and hitting that curve. So it kind of gets slammed hard. So it may be yearly. It may be, you know, 4 months. I'd
have to look into that because I haven't done much research on that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, especially going up there and checking out these places you've been before, you know, to see what changes have they made.
Well, you know, speaking of changes, you got Cajon Pass. That's a highway. They have triple track now.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot more traffic going through there.
Well, the thing was they had when they started building the third track for the BNSF main line, they had anticipated the economy going up at that point. There'd be a lot more trains. Because I remember going there when it was just double track BNSF main line, and they had a traffic jam. It was like the LA freeway on Cone Pass. But nowadays, I mean, I don't know how many more trains are, if it's increasing or not, but at least the past couple of years, sometimes you'd go up there and you wouldn't see a train on the pass.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it is stack, you know, in trailer. And one more thing is, for those of you who don't, UP actually has truckage rights.
Yeah.
You know, from
You'll see UP trains going up the, or going down the BNSF mains there.
Yeah.
They don't exclusively use the old SP cutoff.
Yeah. And only part of the trains from Tehachapi use that.
Yeah.
The high priority, you know, Z trains and intermodals, they really just pretty much use the old main.
Yeah. Through Soledad.
Right.
Because the basic idea of the cutoff was to bypass, you know, the Soledad Canyon going through Burbank, going through L.A. to get to the West Colton Yard.
Yeah, because all of the manifests use that.
Yeah.
You know, most of the intermodal will just use Soledad Canyon.
It's kind of just a detour. It's not as fast, right? Or is it faster than going down Soledad?
No, it's more grade.
Yeah, it's more of a...
Going Cajon. It's
more of a grade.
It's a 3% grade.
But then they go up there, you know, through Roseville and... Not Roseville. They go up there through Lancaster, and they go up
Rosamond,
to Mojave.
Yeah.
Rosemond. Rosemond,
yeah. Well, Roseville is a SP yard, but...
It's I'm talking about the Apple Valley.
Yeah, here you go.
Or Antelope Valley or whatever they're calling it these days. But, yeah, that's how they get up to Mojave, an alternate route than the old SP line through Soledad Canyon. Well, I think we should end for today.
Mm-hmm.
We hope that you have enjoyed the show, and we hope that you subscribe on iTunes. For those of you on YouTube, this is an audio only podcast available on iTunes. And
one quick thing to add in, any questions, please ask us. We'd be feel free to answer.
Yeah, there's a comment section on YouTube for a reason, and there's also a review section on iTunes, which I will read if you post something there, whether it be a question or a suggestion or, I don't know, whatever you want to say. And be sure to visit the club, or visit the museum, rather, on pretty much any day except Monday.
Yeah.
And it's reasonable. You get to see a bunch of clubs here and some of the biggest model railroads in the United States right here.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks for watching. See you next time.